Hi, with Truth News Radio Australia on the 20th of March 2013. Welcome to another show, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Hereward Fenton, and it is a delight to bring you this show every week, to be able to step through the deceptions and show you some truths, although it is extremely difficult. But I do believe that this is something that we'd achieve, and it's not as hard as some would imagine. It is simply difficult to have the stamina and the determination to get it done. But in fact, the information that contradicts the assault of untruths is actually not that hard to find. You've simply got to have your eyes open, and that's what we do in this show. We basically have our eyes open, and we talk about what we know. We talk about what we've seen, we share it, and you can respond. Now, today's show, I'm going to be talking quite a bit about some Australian news, which has been described as a direct assault on the freedom of press and journalism in Australia. And these are the new media regulation laws, which have been brought in under the aegis of the infamous Minister of Communications, Stephen Conroy, the man who tried to bring you the internet filter a couple of years ago. And in the, you know, it's incredible because, you know, this guy just seems to love to pin his name to absolutely abhorrent fascist rollbacks of democracy, but done in a way that he makes it seem blandly nice and pretends that it's not what it is. But in this case, there has been a massive backlash in Australia, and I'm just going to play you a little clip here from Kim Williams, the chief of news media, News Limited, sorry, in Australia, News Limited CEO Kim Williams. And I'm just going to play a little bit from a speech that he gave in the past few days. Here we go.
Constitutional, because it will undermine freedom.
Actually, I'll just have to rewind the playhead there. We'll start that again.
This bill proposes something unconstitutional because it will undermine freedom of communication about government or political matters. I implore the committee to carefully consider this issue in addition to the other serious matters of public policy raised in the bills. These laws propose direct regulatory intervention in and control of print and digital media and invoke sanctions not seen outside of wartime. They not only offend the constitutional freedom of political communication, but also are a direct assault on the independent operation of Australian journalism. A lot has been written and said since last Tuesday. I think it is in all of our interests to examine the materiality of the bills. The introduction of the public interest media advocate and its ability to declare and revoke declarations of self-regulation bodies is fundamentally inconsistent with a free press.
There we have it, fundamentally inconsistent with a free press. And there's a number of articles here about it, which have been really dominating the news. And I'll just give you a little more information about the substance of these bills. There are six bills in the suite of media reforms under consideration. Two of them have attracted a little attention. Now, what is proving controversial is the government's plan to appoint a public interest media advocate. This is the terminology that they're using. The advocate would be responsible for ensuring the establishment of self-regulatory bodies to oversee the operation of the media. He or she would make sure those bodies enforce their own rules. Now, to discuss this whole saga and other unfolding stories from around the world, I'd just like to welcome back to Truth News the amazing, the incredible Joshua Jackson, joining us from Berlin, Germany. Josh, how you going, buddy?
Oh, yeah. It's good to be back on Truth News, Hereward. Fantastic.
Well, it's great to have you back, my friend.
The hardest-hitting show in the world, on the internet. Well, you know, there's the Truth News, I think, is definitely on the top shelf, along with some other very good news aggregators.
Well, you know, I have had some informal feedback that our show does have a bit of intellectual kudos. I've actually been told that, and it is what it is. I mean, you know, we're certainly we don't try to come across as being overly smart, but I think we try to use our intelligence to the best of our ability. And you know, what I like to do with these stories is not to sort of try and give you some amazing piece of information that you never heard before, but I want to reflect on it. And now, Josh, of course, you're on the other side of the planet, and you're not really probably that concerned about these little storms in a teacup that we have back in your homeland. But now that you've had a chance to familiarize yourself with this media regulation fandango, what's your take?
What do they want to call the position again?
Public interest media advocate. It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, it's been called Stalinist. It's been called Orwellian. It's Kafkaesque. It's incredible, isn't it?
It's extremely Orwellian. I mean, just the sound of it. I mean, how transparent do you want to get? It sounds like, you know, when they say, "Oh, the People's Republic of," you know, China, like these, the People's. You know, they sort of put these terms which are totally like rubbish. I mean, how can one person really make sure it's of the public interest? I mean, the public has so many different interests. And look, to be honest, I'm not worried about this sort of thing purely because I'm over the other side of the planet at the moment. And but I'm actually it sort of doesn't really affect me as such because I don't own a television. I hardly listen to the radio, and that's not because I want to stay ignorant. In fact, I think it's the other way around. If you have a television, you tend to be ignorant. And what this really is to me, it's kind of it's kind of the government trying to grasp onto, I don't know, building itself, because government's just trying to get bigger and bigger, right? So this is just another position to sort of grow a little bit into the media spectrum. But really, the media has become so useless that I mean, through my circle of friends, I don't think many people of below the age of 38 really watch much television. I mean, generally we get our news from a very diverse spectrum of global sources, namely the internet, and so. It's quite silly to think that Australia is sitting there trying to tell the news what to say or the media organisations what to say, because really they don't really make much difference. I mean, they do in a lot of ways, but that's becoming less and less prominent. I feel it's not the mainstream media anymore. They literally are the lamestream media. They always have been, but now they literally are, because no one really cares what they say.
But now, of course, these reforms, as they're calling them, have evolved out of the scandals that we saw with News Limited and the Murdoch clan. Invading people's privacy.
Not that the government does that. Not that the government sits there spying on everybody's stuff anyway. You know, like the government
sits there
spying on everybody openly, you know, calling for it. And then Conroy sits on the other side saying, oh, private media organizations aren't allowed to. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And I think, you know, when you really, I don't like people spying on me, don't get me wrong, but when you get, you know, an agency who openly spies on everyone and says we need more and more mandates to solidify this sort of action, to then come across and say, "Where you guys aren't allowed to," it's a human rights issue. All this sort of rubbish. You just got to laugh at it. Honestly, it's so laughable. If it wasn't truth, it would be one of the funniest jokes.
It's been claimed that these bills breach constitutional rights, equate to direct government intervention and regulation of the media, a direct attack on free speech. Now, this is coming from the CEO of a large organization. Now, bear in mind, I don't bow down before News Limited. I think they're a bunch of crooks, okay? But in the situation where essentially everyone's a crook, you know, the government's crooked, the big business is crooked, and all of the people who are trying to make it in this crooked world have to become crooked in order to make it. But there's still got to be some truth somewhere that we can find. And when you see this in the media now, I mean, there's been in the newspapers here this morning. I was looking in the Telegraph, which is really a blue collar tabloid, but they had all these quotes from the founding fathers of the U.S. Constitution in the Telegraph, Thomas Jefferson. I mean, they were really what's actually happened is that the libertarian philosophy, which inspires this show and is central to the Constitution of the U.S., those thoughts and those principles are emerging again in the mainstream media as a direct result of this fascist, collectivist, authoritarian trend that we've seen in our government. It's actually provoking the opposite of it, which I think is really is positive in some ways. Because you wouldn't have seen that a few years ago. I mean, you mean
no? And they choose it very. They never really talk about anything like that philosophically until they need it on their side, and that I think is a shame. Also, I mean, you know, really, like the media sits there using these philosophies, and when they need it to discourage. Something that's happening bad to them, but when something's bad is happening to the people, where you really need to outline these sort of philosophical thoughts and processes and the history behind where this sort of thoughts come from, all of a sudden you don't hear anything. You just hear they're just a bunch of conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, it's incredible. They'll draw on these really powerful philosophies only when it suits them, only in an emergency to get them out of a desperate situation. Later on, when they've got their crooked system back in control again, they'll never talk about it again. We're just heading to break. Yep. Look, the notes for all this will be on the show, links to these articles. It's a complex one, but do have a look at it. We'll be right back after the break with some more stories and more analysis. Don't go away. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us. Part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life, throwing strife into the mix.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be talking to you today. Do check us out on the internet if you get a chance. Get over to truthnews.com.au. Get over to Logos Radio Network as well, and you'll be able to listen to the live stream there on Logos. And you'll be able to get the podcast there that get pumped out almost immediately after the show goes live. Unfortunately, due to the fact that I'm extremely resource poor, I'm rather slow in getting my podcasts out, and I'm currently about a month behind in terms of published podcasts on the website. But you can get the latest ones always from Logos. Now, we were talking there in the last segment about the media regulation proposals here in Australia and the furore over that, and what it kind of signifies. And to me, it really signifies the failure and the duplicity of corporatist style of governance. And by corporatist, I mean the fusion of big business with government and banks to basically control everything. And it has been described as socialism. You could call it socialism, but you could say, well, you know, there are certain aspects to socialism as a principle that are good. You know, protecting the weak, having a safety net, all that kind of stuff, providing medical care for those who need it. Those are good things. So I tend to try not to just attack it and say it's socialism, but what it shows you is the tendency within statist styles of governance to become this monolithic structure with giant monopolistic powers behind it to eventually eviscerate the actual essence of a democracy.
Yeah, and massively corruptible.
Yeah, so corruptible. And we've got to get a better system. You know, if there's anything you can take from this, from what I'm saying, it's just like I don't have the ideal solution. Like, I'm not the guy who says, you've got to do this, you know, like Zeitgeist is the answer, or, you know, there's all these people out there saying this is the answer. I don't feel that's my job. Like, because I think it's really, it's a complex landscape, you know, and most of the answers that I've seen out there have all been wrong. Because it seems that we've got a problem with the way people think almost. It's like they get led into this path which seems to recreate. You know, we saw this with the revolutions that occurred over the past 100 or 200 years, just ending up recreating tyranny, thinking that they're doing something to liberate people, then recreating tyranny, going back to the French Revolution even. Well, what's your quick take on that from you, Josh?
Well, most revolutions. I mean, pretty much I can't think of many revolutions that haven't just turned back around to become another monolithic piece of crap.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, you get all this violence, all this all these people, revolution, and a whole lot of murder and chaos happens, and then they overthrow the state. Everyone parties and drinks beer for a week, and then, you know, pretty quickly, you get another dictator.
Yeah.
So it's really, you know, the thing is, it's a philosophical question, I think, and you know, we need to get away from. We're after freedom, or where are these sort of things? It's more, we're after morality. What is moral? Is stealing moral? Is it moral to steal or hit people or use violence to fund things? Is it moral to use violence to fund things? I think that boils right down to a good philosophical question, which can be a baseline to say, hey, this society, really, we should try to look at how moral as possible as we can be. And the fact of the matter is, you can't be moral with a state going around just stealing people's money. And when I say money, money is actually a piece of paper or a piece of coin or something that equates to work that your body that you own wholeheartedly has done. You know, you've gone out and spent your precious life, which is a very, which is a finite amount of time, which is only ever being taken out of the you can't get time back. And so when you do work, you do work for a certain a bit of something that you can then trade for something else, which will help you live better.
Because it has a benefit for people, because it's really, you are benefiting humanity in some way by what you're doing. You are positively adding to the sum total of human existence.
And if you're not positively adding, it generally doesn't have a value, so you can't trade it. So,
indeed.
If someone doesn't find... Now, the thing is, if a state comes along and just take half of that by force, and there's a difference if you give half of that voluntarily, that's fine. Because you're obviously giving something for something in return that you feel is adequate.
Now, yes.
That's the real, that really is an important thing to boil over in people's minds is what are we really after? And that, I think when we look at now, and I think we're going to look into this later on about Cyprus. But,
well, let's talk about that now. Indeed, the Cyprus bailout, which would have had accounts levied up to 10%. For accounts that were over 100,000 euros, they would have had a 10% levy on them, and then a 6.75% levy for those below 100,000 euros. Now, they're calling it a levy, but you could just call it theft, really, couldn't you?
It's just theft.
Yeah.
It's just theft. It's just a bunch of bankers saying, hey, Gov, if we're not going to open again, basically, and I mean Germany's saying that to the Cypriots. I mean they're basically saying, look, if you don't bail out the banks, then the banks will probably not even open. So a lot of people are like, oh, is 6.7% better than nothing?
And so it's
this whole threat. And I mean the Americans have the same thing in the initial bailout. The bank said, look, if you guys don't bail us out, we're basically shutting down. That was back in 2008. And so we have this thing all over again. And this is a typical modus operandi. They had a bank holiday on Monday. And, of course, Tuesday they're going to wake up with 10% less or 6.75% less euros in their account. Now, a lot of people are saying, oh, well, this is a big play between Russia and Germany, and Cyprus is kind of stuck in the middle because Germany's got a lot of Cypriotic bonds. But at the end of the day, it's a global banking structure. And also, I don't know. I mean, it's a very complex play.
Russia has now threatened to pull financial aid to Cyprus in retaliation. Apparently, a large amount of the money in the Cypriot banks is actually Russian money. Russia, and thank God for Russia, because basically Russia does not toe the line, as we've seen, on many issues. And as is exemplified in the Russian media outlet RT, they stand in stark contrast to the Orwellian regime of the Western pseudo democratic alliances.
Yeah, but the Russian have really they have a lot of they're basically a big old mafia as well. I mean they just use this side of the argument as a defensive to try to gain more support for their crooked crap as well. I mean, they basically just stole a massive multi-billion-dollar energy company.
Josh, we're just going to break. Sorry to interrupt. We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We will be right back after this short break.
Man to man. is so unjust. Children, yeah, don't know who to trust. Your worst enemy could be your best friend, and your best friend your worst enemy.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be talking to you today, and a lot of your media outlets out there have an agenda, and we've just been talking about it off mic here. Fact is, guys, we've got an agenda too. I mean, let's be clear about it. We have an agenda. Our agenda is freedom. Yeah, and you can argue till the cows come home about what that means, and whether it's a good thing, and I hope we can have that argument. But our agenda is freedom, our agenda is truth, our agenda is justice. Again, another loaded word. But what's your take on the meaning of those words, Josh?
Well, you know, I think words in this day and age don't have much meaning. It's the context that has meaning. And I think that's a very important thing to always remember, because words are spun like nothing else in this day and age. When words have too much of a meaning outside of a context, when they're held to, you know, of course they do, it's kind of a strange thing to say that words have a meaning, but it's really important to hear a word that is a loaded word in the context. And really look at the context, zoom out a bit and see the wider context and read between the lines and also see who's saying that word and what they've said in the past.
Yeah, because certain words have become so diluted. Like, you know, under George Bush, the word freedom became like just a hollow joke, didn't it? Because a number of times I heard George W. Bush, you know, talk about freedom. It was ludicrous. It was sort of devalued of all meaning.
You get the words like anarchy. Anarchy is now, in most people, totally like, you know, people throwing Molotov cocktails and total chaos and no one, everyone just fighting and hurting each other and throwing bombs and crazy haircuts. I mean.
Yes, well, I guess anarchy would be an example of a word that's become supercharged. It's not used very often, and it's acquired all these quite frightening meanings. When in fact, anarchy is something. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
For me, I mean, something like marriage can be explained as anarchic. You know, marriage is anarchy. You know, you're going out there on the free market and looking for a wife or a man, and no one's forcing you. There's no boss telling you who to marry. And you know, if there was, you'd think, what? And everyone would be up in arms. So, you know, you can really twist it to say, hey, look, anarchy is such a beautiful thing. You need it. You know, you absolutely need it, because if you don't, you've got someone telling you who to love and who to marry, and that's pretty much rape.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Look, anyway, sorry for the digression there, but just getting back to this, getting back to the Cyprus affair, quite clearly, this was a grab, a criminal. I mean, I have to use the word criminal, because it really was an attempt to seize people's hard-earned money. We're not talking about investments here that were high-risk investments. People who make high-risk investments make the risk knowingly that they could lose their money, okay? It still can be done wrongly and it still can be dishonest, but this is totally different to that. This is a savings account. And the idea of a savings account is you're just putting your money in the bank to keep it safe, right? That's all it is. It's exactly like me giving you my money to put in a safe. That's the concept of it. Right, it's not about investing it in some risky venture, but they were going to take it, and because of that, and I've got a quote here from the governor of the Reserve Bank of Australia. The Reserve Bank of Australia's governor is uncomfortable about how Cyprus is treating its bank depositors, fearing it could erode confidence in the whole banking system. And he says here, and this was at a conference in Sydney a couple of days ago. I'll give you a chance to speak in a minute. He says, I think the aspect of it that is most surprising is that many of these deposits are in fact insured deposits, he said, following an address to the Australian Industry Group's annual economic forum. In the public's mind, there is a risk that this undermines the strength or the belief that people have in the integrity of deposits, and he says it raises serious implications for the future.
Yeah. I mean, the confidence in the banking structures is really not high anyway. You can see him sweating. Yeah, that's why he's sweating, because really everyone's just had enough.
It's already become quite fragile and tenuous. But once banks come to this stage of seizing money, this is your worst case scenario. This is like the nightmare scenario. And declaring a bank holiday. And I think in Cyprus they extended it for another couple of days. And already people in Spain, I believe Italy and Portugal, were getting jittery, and there were signs of runs on the banks in those countries.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, even if this doesn't pass, which it looks like it hasn't, the Parliament of Cyprus has pretty much unilaterally rejected the plans. But the thing is that they've kept the bank runs have already happened. The ATMs are cleaned out. There's still a pause on transfers in terms of wire transfers through the internet. And so you already have a very jittery. As soon as the banks open, you're going to see a run on the banks, because just for them to basically offer this as a concept has made people realize, hang on a minute, these are big companies and I trust them, but I have had to trust them in the past, but I don't trust them anymore. So what are people going to do? And I think people are going to try to run to safe havens like gold, silver, even Bitcoin. And we've seen a huge escalation in Bitcoin over the last few days. I mean, it's gone up nearly 7 to 8% in one day. We see it was at $50, and during this whole Cyprus crisis, it's now jumped up to $59. We see people really thinking, hey, you know what? Screw this, I'm out.
Yeah.
And I think this will happen in Greece. It'll start rolling across Europe if the banks don't just actually adhere to the people instead of the government, and they won't. So I think it's really important that people actually diversify their savings, keep some cash. I mean, I personally keep most of my cash. Not that I have massive savings, but I keep mine in Bitcoin because I feel that that's extremely secure, and I keep it in gold and silver, bullion, my cash is basically when I get paid for a job, or I want to dip out and buy something that I could only buy in cash. Although that's getting a lot easier with Bitcoin now; you can pretty much buy anything.
Sure.
If
I may ask, Josh, I mean, how are you doing with your investment there in Bitcoin? I mean, if you were to cash it back into money, compared to what your original investment was, I mean, are you well ahead?
No, mate, I mean, I bought some Bitcoin when they were $13,
right,
and now they're $59. So it's definitely an appreciation, and that's basically because the whole money supply is collapsing, and they can print as much as they want, and that's what you'll actually see. I'll just get back to that point, but sure. They can print as much as you want, but Bitcoin or something or gold is only mined. It takes a lot of resource to mine gold. It takes Bitcoin is predictable, and you know exactly how much is getting printed over the next few years because it's written to the protocol.
Yeah,
and it's open source, not like the Federal Reserve, which is anything but open source. you know, you can see exactly every line of code of what Bitcoin is behind, riding behind Bitcoin, and its cryptographic baseline.
And it's so portable, of course, as well. I mean, you know, one of the problems with gold is a bit of a problem of what do you do with it when you've got more than a small amount, because you've got to keep it somewhere. And if you're moving, if you're traveling, what do you do? We're just going to break. We're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to have your company today. We'll be right back for another segment after this short break. Back here with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be with you today. And we're just talking here about financial crisis. I believe that the Cyprus affair is very important, in the same way that what happened in Iceland was very, very important. It was only one country, but it became... It was actually the beginning of a whole sequence of things that occurred. When you see an event like this occur, it's a precedent, and you've got to treat it. It is serious. This one may die down. It may not cause a ripple effect, but then you can't be sure. It may look like it has. It may look like it's died down, but then there still may be a ripple effect, simply because of the revealing of the intentions of the banksters. They've shown their colours. Now, we're talking about safe havens. Yeah, go ahead.
And I just wanted to add to that, that generally you see this as also the way they work is testing these extreme ideas out on little countries where they think there's not going to be too much backlash or too much, even if it goes down, people think, oh, well, who the hell is Cyrus? I mean, some people haven't even heard of the country. It's kind of this half-owned by Greece and Turkey, you know, it's kind of a strange little place. And so they test it out. And Australia is also a test bed, funnily enough, not because of size in terms of land mass, but of size of population. It's been a test bed for a lot of globalist ideas.
Yes, it certainly has. And back to the question of safe havens. So, I mean, the great thing about Bitcoin to me is that it's so portable. You don't have to put it in the bank. It is safe where it is. I'm not absolutely across the technology here, but as I understand it, you could put it on a USB stick. Like if you wanted to sort of carry it around with you, would that be correct?
I mean, you can put it on a USB stick. You can even go better. You can store it in your brain. You can remember. You can have what's called a brain wallet, which is basically memorizing a string of characters or a string of words, like a passphrase. You know,
yes,
some words that don't really make sense as a sentence, but it's a phrase. It's like a password, but a passphrase. And you can go to another country, have nothing on you, recreate the wallet in a new country using this passphrase, and that'll unlock your bitcoins to be able to be used.
Can you explain how that happens? Is there a central server somewhere? How does that work?
No, I mean, this is the thing about Bitcoin. It's totally decentralized. They can't shut it down. It's kind of like BitTorrent. When sharing music first came around, you had Napster, which was a central server, which could be shut down. You know, and the music and film industry quickly shut it all down, or the music industry, because it was a central server which could be shut down. Then BitTorrent came along, which was decentralized version. Some geeks came around, how can we do this? And you can't shut down BitTorrent or Bitcoin without shutting down the entire internet. And I think. They shut down the entire internet, you've got some worse problems than your Bitcoin.
Okay, and just to get back to this, as you said, you could store it in your brain. How many digits would you need to store in your brain? I mean, that seems like a massive amount of information that you'd have to memorize.
Well, I mean, not necessarily. There's people really trying to tackle this idea because it's an important idea. It means you can't get robbed without being, extremely, tortured, I guess, or whatever. But
there are still some aspects of it that I don't fully understand, and I probably need to research it myself. I would assume that the more bitcoins you have, the more digits or more numbers. So if you have a massive amount of it, you can't be memorizing all that.
No. What it is basically bitcoins are stored in a blockchain in a ledger, in a huge ledger that's actually floating around in the cloud, right? So everybody, it's on everybody's machines that are running these mining things. So all you have, your Bitcoin wallet on your computer, is actually just a key to say you own this portion of it.
I see. So it's not centralized, but it does have it exists in the network, similar to BitTorrent seeds represent information that's flowing from peer to peer.
Exactly, it's a peer-to-peer network, and your Bitcoin wallet is actually a key to open up your little deposit box in the cloud, which is made up of
Could you actually compare it to a BitTorrent seed? Is it like a BitTorrent seed?
You could definitely compare it to that. Yeah,
right.
Everyone that's mining Bitcoin is actually keeping track of a ledger. What they're doing is verifying ledger entries to make sure that there's no double spends. Now, that's where it's not anonymous because everyone can see this Bitcoin address has this many Bitcoins. But how it is anonymous is that nobody knows who that Bitcoin address belongs to. I can create 1,000 Bitcoin addresses right now and have one Bitcoin in each. And no one, it'd be extremely difficult to look, especially if you can use Tor networks or anything else. You can really hide your wealth well, and it's almost it's impossible to trace unless you have some supercomputer working for longer than the universe has been around to try and crack.
Absolutely.
Then maybe you could, but. That's why a lot of people are saying in cryptography we trust, because it's
there is that integrity there. It's
behind it. It's so strong.
It's a very important.
I mean,
principle.
saying that, it's still a very early stage, and it's an experiment. It's an experiment that's been verified by many extremely intelligent mathematicians and extremely intelligent people who have gone over this and gone, wow, this is really amazing, what a tight stuff.
Absolutely.
Now saying that, I would still make sure you're diversified in gold and silver as well, because these sort of things are stand the test of time.
Absolutely.
And the test of time in these sort of dire areas. You get these preppers who basically prepare for doomsday. They buy alcohol. They buy liquor because they know when everything hits the fan, alcohol is very very that'll appreciate in price so high because people want to forget all the woes of the society that's collapsed or they just want to trade it on, and so it becomes a currency as well. So you can diversify into a few things. The thing is, some people don't think the world's coming to an end, so maybe alcohol is not the best solution, whereas gold is a good store of wealth through most times. Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, look, I've just got to quickly change pace here. I just want to play a very quick clip from Syria, from Syrian Girl, who, by the way, will be coming on this show in the next few weeks. I've had an email from her saying she would like to come back on. Now, I'm just going to very quickly play a clip here to deconstruct some of the lies from the Western media.
Hi, everyone. Syrian Girl reporting. There are reports emerging that the FSA insurgents have used chemical weapons of some kind on Syrian soldiers and civilians in rural Aleppo, in an area called Khan al-Assal. 25 people were killed and 16 of them were Syrian soldiers. There are many injured and the numbers are still coming in. The opposition is now counterclaiming that the Syrian government were the ones to have used the weapons, even though the majority of those killed were Syrian soldiers. The US has also come to the defense of the armed opposition, saying that it was unlikely that chemical weapons were used at all. But clearly, these people are sick with something that is not an outward injury. If not a chemical weapon, then what? A Reuters photographer on the scene said that the air smelt of chlorine. He reported that people had breathing problems and some of them died of suffocation. Quote, "They said that people were suffocating in the streets and the air smelt strongly of chlorine," the photographer said, stressing that most of the victims he saw while visiting the University of Aleppo Hospital and Al Rajah Hospital were women and children. "People were dying in the streets and in their houses," he said by phone. This little girl is wearing the two-star flag on her wristband, something she would only be able to do in a government-controlled area, which is the area that was attacked. Chemical weapons expert, Chief Operating Officer of Secure Bio, Hamish D. Britton Gordon, told CBS News that based on the video he had seen of the victims in Aleppo Hospital, the symptoms were not really those that are identified with nerve agents or mustard gas, which are the ones that he says are more likely to be used inside Syria. Britton Gordon noted that none of the people in the hospitals treated attack victims were wearing protective clothing. If a chemical agent had been dispersed, he said anybody coming into contact with the victims would also be affected. Doctors treating them would be overcome. If we are to consider his words, then it is possible this toxic gas wasn't something that was part of a military arsenal, but a makeshift home lab chemical weapon. Something like what the FSA has mixed up to kill rabbits in one of their videos. Reports are still coming in about what happened, but certainly this is a huge escalation in the war against Syria.
Okay, we'll just leave it there. Josh, we have run out of time. Thank you so much for coming on today.
No problem, my friend. No problem. It's been an interesting, fascinating journey.
It has, and it will continue to be. And I think we're going to do another big show on Bitcoin. We're going to get right back into it, I think. Josh, if we can draw on your expertise there at some point, that would be awesome, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Great. Well, that's all from Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be back next week. Good night.